Good morning, everybody. I love that last song we've sang a couple of weeks, but Romolo had found, and we've been singing, and a couple of the phrases that said, we know our world needs Jesus, we know our world needs freedom, so give us eyes to see the hurting and the broken, and let our lives align with every word you say. It made me think of in Luke chapter 4 when Jesus explains why he came to earth. And basically he gives his mission statement. It was taken from Isaiah 61, and that's where they are, and that's the scroll that they hand him, and he opens up to that place and reads it, and basically reads what he's about, why he's here, what he's after, what he's for. And I'd like to read that out of a paraphrase, and it's read this way. God's Spirit is on me. He's chosen me to preach the message of good news to the poor, sent me to announce pardon to prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, and I like how they kind of reworded this last phrase, to set the burdened and battered free, and to announce this is God's year to act. And it just kind of brings it into our day and where we're at and what we're about, to set the burdened and battered free and to announce this is God's year to act. We welcome you to our Justice Matters Sunday. This is our ninth year of doing this. If you've come in this time to, hey, let's go visit Calvary Marietta for the first time, this is different. This is not what we do every Sunday morning, but we're excited to do it and raise all the more awareness to the human trafficking issue. And so with that overview this morning, you're going to hear from Dr. Sandy Morgan in just a minute, Dave Rogers and Harmony Dust Gorillo in here in the sanctuary. And then second and third service, we have five different workshops, so we hope that you can spend some time with us this morning. We also have food vendors for the day, 18 exhibitors, and so we hope you're able to stay with us. To introduce Dr. Sandy Morgan, she's the director of the Global Center for Women and Justice over at Vanguard. We congratulate Sandy as she's with her new appointment from President Trump. She's got a two-year term as co-chair of the Public-Private Partnership Advisory Council to End Human Trafficking, and so we congratulate you with that. If you're into listening to podcasts, she started a great podcast. It's called Ending Human Trafficking Podcasts, which is easy to remember. And it always reminds us kind of the three main points. Study the issues, be a voice, and make a difference. Please welcome with me Dr. Sandy Morgan.
You. I love you. You guys all know that. Every year I look forward to this because your church has stepped up and is collaborating in your community. You're partnering. And when I arrived last night, Pastor Brian and Kelly gave me this necklace, and it has the Micah 6:8 verse, act justly, love mercy, walk humbly. And justice, you know, some of you have come to our Ensure Justice Conference every March. That kind of justice says make things fair, make things right. Mercy, loving mercy. I've been living in Genesis where it says we are created in the image of God, Imago Dei. Well, love mercy helps me remember that the person in front of me that just cut in, they are also created in the image of God. Love mercy. I have a really good excuse for why I cut in front of you. So give me some mercy, all right? And walk humbly. And I tell you, this is the 20th anniversary, the 2020, of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. Pray for me as I go to Washington, D.C., literally tomorrow. Walk humbly. None of us has all of the answers. And when I first met Pastor Brian and Kelly, that was the number one thing that drew me to partner with them. They are humble. Your church is humble. You're ready to learn, to study the issues. Thank you so much, Pastor. And I'm so excited because we have, from Human Trafficking Institute, we're kind of on a roll. This is the third year. We have Dave Rogers, Director of Law Enforcement Operations. Dave serves as the Director of Law Enforcement Operations for the Human Trafficking Institute. Last year, we had Victor Boutros. The year before, we had John Cotton Richmond, who is now Ambassador John Cotton Richmond. Dave previously served as the FBI's National Program Manager for Human Trafficking within the Civil Rights Unit. I love that because civil rights, human rights, being created in God's image, I'm going to speak up for the other person, no matter how marginalized they are. He oversaw the FBI's anti-trafficking work across the entire U.S. Prior to this, Dave was an advanced instructor at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, where he trained new agents to conduct criminal investigations. Dave has trained government units on human trafficking from Central and South America, Eastern Europe, and Asia. During his 23 years in federal law enforcement, he developed a broad range of investigative expertise, working organized crime, labor racketeering, asset forfeiture, money laundering, and international terrorism. Dave has a BS in international relations from American University. He also has a beautiful wife, Susan, a son, Avery, a daughter, Corinne, and an adorable dog. He will show you a picture of Gabby. Please come, Dave.
Well, good morning. First of all, Brian and Kelly, thank you for the invitation. Sandy, thank you so much for that introduction. I am, in fact, an old man, so I will probably get my glasses out and have to read a little bit. But I am privileged to be here. I mean, it's an incredible honor. As Sandy mentioned, the founders of my organization actually spoke the previous 2 years. So you all are gluttons for the Human Trafficking Institute punishment. Sorry, okay? There's supposed to be an advancer, and I don't have one. So we'll just play along as we go, and I'll just riff, all right? So, for instance, you all are the ones who clearly love God the most. 7:30 service? What? Okay? Right? You all get God points for being here. And so, and because that's a real thing. That's what I was told, okay? God points are a real thing. So what I have been told, well, when Sandy asked me, how do you want me to read this introduction to you? And I said, yes. Should I add anything? And I said, yes. And I felt I was required to have her add Susan and Avery and Corinne. I mean, of course, because I love them dearly, and frankly, they love me more than I deserve. But really, it's Gabby, my dog, who is factually the cutest dog in the world. So I will hear no gainsayers about that either, okay? So just saying. So no. Listen, thank you, Brian. It's a privilege to get to spend some time with you, and I actually want to do this. My area of expertise is human trafficking. It's what I've been able to work on for a long time, but I want to talk to you about a broader issue than that. And I'm here to actually encourage all of you to get engaged. And before you send any nasty emails to Brian, or I want you to hear me out first, I am not encouraging any of you to get married, okay? Please, unless of course you want to get married, okay? And then that's fine, but that's not what I'm talking about. Let's go get this issue. I love the fact that this is, we want to talk about being justice-minded, that that's what this is. And that implies so much more than just being just, right? And actually doing just things. Frankly, that should be the given for what we do. No. When we're talking about being justice-minded, it's talking about being so enveloped by God's will for us to engage with Him on both justice and injustice issues that it just becomes part of who we are to actually engage the world around us. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. So, as you all know, because you've been doing this for, well, it's not there anymore. So, as you've been doing the Justice Matters thing for 9 years. I mean, it's incredible. I love that you guys have been engaged on this, to be able to get your community to start to no longer be able to turn a blind eye to the issues that go around the world. So there are so many verses. Like when I pull out my Bible, which also acts as a computer, which sometimes I get phone calls on, I actually one time scrolled through in my Bible on my app and said, okay, how many verses related to justice? I just typed in, you know, and 128 verses just on this phone, right? And you can get, you know, those concordances, and that's even more. And it's from Genesis to Revelation. I found 128 verses. God cares about justice. It is a God-sized problem, and it is a God-sized issue, and we can't ignore it. If he's talking about, we got 66 love letters from him telling us, hey, do justice, okay? And do it. Don't just talk about it. So I want, you know, and there's so many verses, okay? And so here's one of them. Learn to do right. Seek justice. Defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. That should be, frankly, the mission statement for the global church. Seriously, the Imago Dei part that Sandy referenced, and I know Brian speaks about regularly, okay, every single human being you encounter, good, bad, negative, are made in the image of God. You have yet to come across someone who doesn't matter to God. That's hard to remember sometimes when somebody cuts you off when you're trying to get into church, right? It's even harder to remember when you think about the horrific things that go on our planet. But every single one of them matter to God, and God is telling us they need to matter to us. Here's another verse that I particularly like from Proverbs. When justice is done, it brings joy to the righteous, but terror to the evildoers. I kind of dig that one, okay? As like a law enforcement guy, okay, and a former military guy, oh man, I so want to change the paradigm of fear and take it off of the people who have been victimized and on to the victimizers. Dude, darn right they should be afraid, right? Let's go get them. But here's one that I really want us to rest in for a little while. And in my years working in the FBI, the last 4 years of my career, I actually led the human trafficking program in the civil rights unit. But I also happened to be the long-term acting head of the civil rights unit when Ferguson happened. So we dealt with all kinds of justice and injustice issues that happened all along the way. And this is a verse that has stuck with me over the years, right? Okay. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. I love this verse. This verse is actually telling us that we have to actually get engaged. And I love the image of breaking the ties that are the yoke upon humankind, right? All of us have engaged in some capacity. I don't mean engaged in. We have been subject to some form of injustice. And it's a weight on us. And God is saying, hey, my people, okay? You guys are not perfect. You're screwed up. Here's what I want you to do, okay? Man, let's take the yoke off of people so they can live free and live life and live it to the full, right? That's what he's wanting from us. So I love the fact that when I got to do this, I got to participate in the idea of breaking the bonds of injustice, all right, and breaking every yoke. True connection with God is manifested in setting captives free. And that's what human trafficking is. As you all know, you've been doing this for a long time. Human trafficking is a modern day form. It's not the same as chattel slavery. It is not the same as state-sponsored, state-sanctioned, lawful, legalized slavery, but it's the same conditions, forcing people to do things against their will for the profit of somebody else, right? That's what it is. And so when we're talking about slavery, we're saying, hey, or anti-slavery, we're saying, hey, can we set people free? And it's clear that we are called to act justly. And it's not just a call to, oops, time for me to wake up. So it's clear that we are called to do more than just act justly, all right? Frankly, that should be the given, isn't it? Like, you know, I remember geometry, not well, but, you know, like there were givens in the equations. Treating people with dignity and respect, I think, is one of the givens. Just saying, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it is. So, no, I think what God is calling us to do is he's calling us to engage significantly more than that, to actually not turn a blind eye to the injustice that we see as well. It's okay, and frankly, it's all right to act justly, but it's also our responsibility to actually intervene when injustice is occurring. We don't have an excuse to do nothing. Fear is not an excuse to do nothing. Lack of personal skills is not an excuse to do nothing. Justice is rooted in the nature of God. And as Paul tells us in Romans, God shows no favoritism. None. None of us are exempt from the responsibility to engage the world. But what does injustice look like today? I bet you if I polled you guys, you could actually give me some examples. When I was in the FBI's in the Civil Rights Unit, we saw all kinds of things, right? From hate crimes based on race, religion, gender, sexual identity, police misconduct and brutality matters, human trafficking, which is that modern-day slavery that you guys talk about so much, and it's impacting every single state in the United States of America and every country on our planet. I know you were raised, most of you, in school that said slavery doesn't exist anymore. I was too. And then I found out very late in my career that actually slavery still exists, and I was just shocked and appalled. I remember when I was in, we called it junior high then, because again, I'm old. All right, so when I was in junior high, I learned that one of my ancestors was an abolitionist poet. During the Civil War, in fact, Frederick Douglass cited him and those kinds of things. And I thought, that is so awesome and so irrelevant today because slavery doesn't exist anymore. And then literally 18 years into my career, I find out that trafficking and slavery is alive and well on the planet. But it's different. It's different because it's also illegal everywhere in the world. Imagine millennia of slavery being normative. In fact, it being codified in legal systems, and within the last 200 years, we've gone from that to every country on the planet saying it's not right. It's morally an injustice and an offense to God. So there's all kinds of things, right? I was so saddened. Don't you remember 2018? Right? Sexual assaults become rampant and they become in the news. Listen, they were rampant before 2018, okay? But how many of you were as saddened and angered as I was when our friends and our family members typed "Me Too"? I remember my sister, a Methodist pastor, typed "Me Too." And I wanted to physically engage. I never knew that, didn't understand that, and was really, really bothered by that. These injustices that persist in our country, and frankly, we run the risk right now of hatred at a global scale going on with people that it's becoming normative in our community, where people are almost unabashedly going about with hate speech and things like that. And they feel empowered to be able to do it for some reason. And I'm not here to speak politically, okay? But there are some people that think that way. And the challenge is, what are we going to do about it? These kinds of injustices, the enslaving of human beings, rampant racism, assaults on human beings and their dignity, those are the chains that Isaiah was speaking about, right? Those are the things that stuff needs to be done about. In most parts of the world, injustice is normative. Justice is actually a pipe dream. My friends, Victor Boutros, who was here last year, he wrote a book with Gary Haugen called The Locust Effect, and in that they talked about endemic to being poor is a vulnerability to violence. And in their book called The Locust Effect, they talk about how the violence and insecurity lead to a vulnerability of all kinds of injustice. From everyday assaults, property damage, domestic abuse, illegal land grabbing, to unabated sexual abuse violence, we have
forced labor, forced marriages, human sacrifice, witchcraft, I deal with all of those things, child soldiers, and forced illegal detentions. Those are the very kinds of chains of injustice which Isaiah was urging us to break so many years ago. They also talk about that law enforcement in the developing world is so broken that most people on our planet live outside of the rule of law. Here's my question for you, one of them. If you had something happen to you illegal and you called 911, would you be upset if they didn't come? And if you are upset that they didn't come, what that tells me is that you have a built-in belief that they should come, right? That something positive should happen when you call to the authorities, and yet most of the planet lives outside of that as a reality at all. In fact, it's a foreign concept to them. Would I actually do this? In my work with the Human Trafficking Institute, I've had the pleasure of actually going to Uganda and Belize multiple times and working with their government officials who are trying to improve their capacity at addressing human trafficking. I love that I get to do that. And I get to work with professionals who really, truly want to make a difference. They know that their citizens are being forced for the profit of other human beings into some of the most horrific situations they've ever encountered. And they want something to be done about it. They have really, really good anti-trafficking laws in both places. And yet, victims very seldomly report that their situation to the police or to the government authorities who could help them. Very few victims are served by the provisions provided in their law. Similarly, I've worked with many survivors of trafficking and labor, sex trafficking and labor trafficking in both of those countries and here in the United States. And many of the tireless workers who struggle to actually take those victims and turn them into survivors. That's their job, that's their calling, that's what they do. And I love it because they want to see those human beings, those imago Dei human beings, to actually gain the self-actualization of their life again, right? To actually be able to participate in their community once again. And it's long and it's tiring work. And they are making very great strides. And yet when I ask them, would you ever consider telling law enforcement or the government about their situation? Virtually none of them were willing to do that. Virtually none of them would ever say that because for them, the government is untrustworthy, corrupt, and often complicit in their own victimization. So here's my question. So what if we have good statutes on anti-human trafficking that provide all kinds of resources to victims if no one is ever going to enforce that law? So what if there are crimes against, that there are laws against racism and murder and rape and illegal land grabbing, if there's no comfort and there's no enforcement by the government people? In fact, if the government actually used those laws to continue to oppress people, who cares if most good people, by far the majority of good people, are not racist, who are not hate mongers, who are not corrupt, or who are not abusive? Who cares if long as they're going to stay silent, right? I've heard it said, the silent majority is irrelevant. And it's true. We have to not let that be true anymore. This has to stop. We can't remain silent. We have to act. And the thing is, and I know some of you are thinking, because I've thought it too, okay, yeah, but what can I do? You know, I don't have the passion. I don't know. I don't have any particular skill sets. The thing is, though, if we will let him, with the guidance of God and the protection of God, we can be the solution that we're looking for. We don't need to wait for another rescue mission. We are the rescue mission. Some of us are going, yeah, I don't know what to do that. And the thing is, though, if we wait, we run the risk of being complicit. Listen to what Archbishop Desmond Tutu said, all right, during apartheid. If we are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. All right, by show of hands, who here wants to choose the side of the oppressor? None? I don't understand that. Huh, I'm confused, okay? And the reality, though, is our very inaction actually fosters situations of injustice and allows them to flourish. The reality is when we do nothing, we allow perpetrators to act with impunity. For the third year in a row, I want to show you a slide in a different form, and it's this. The reality in our world is that if you are an owner of human beings so that you can treat them as slaves, you are more likely to be struck by lightning than you are to actually be prosecuted for owning and enslaving a human being. That can't be right, right? What are we doing? You know, we have to be able to engage this. Every single country on the planet has laws against it, and so what? Statistics show that 99.7% of the estimates, the best estimates on the planet of people that are in human trafficking still remain in human trafficking, despite all the efforts. That's our mission statement. We got to go get it. And the thing is, we can, all right? We too often, though, we shame victims. We actually talk about the victims more than we talk about the victimizers. We say, hey, they should have known better, right? It's what they get for getting into that kind of work. This is what they do, right? They should have known the consequences. They should have seen this coming. You know, whatever. Which is, by the way, us kind of denying the Imago Dei in those people. How many people wake up every morning going, man, I cannot wait to be sexually abused by dozens of men today? None. They just simply don't do that. And yet that's what happens when we actually do nothing about it. And when I say we, I'm not talking about law enforcement. I'm talking about humankind does nothing about it, right? We have to engage these situations. And the reality is when we let the victimizers off the hook, it just grows and it grows and it grows. And we let the victimizers off the hook when we start shaming the people who are forced into situations against their will or who have made bad decisions, and we shame them for the decisions that they made or that were made for them. When we scoff and we kind of roll our eyes at the people who are working in the sex trade, okay? When we do those kinds of things and we treat them, you know what it does? It makes them shut down. It makes them say, you know what? You're going to judge me? I know, yeah, you have the ability to help me, blah, 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 okay? You have resources that are available to me, but I'm never going to talk to you because you're making me feel lesser of a human being. How dare we? We have to actually do this. And you know what? Here's the really, really sad part. Victimizers know that we spend all of our attention on the victims and not on them. And they love it. That's why they walk through thunderstorms in the rest of their life with no fear of lightning and with no fear of being held accountable for what they're doing. Because our focus is only on the victimizers and not the victims. Right? We have to engage with that stuff. So God expects us to engage. It's not, this is not meant to get you to feel like ashamed or guilt or anything like that. It's a call to action. Every single one of you, every single one of us have gifts that are uniquely needed for this. Paul talked about it, right? When we work as a community, when we act as a community, we're so much stronger. We are not good enough on our own, and that's okay. That's not, again, meant to shame you or anything. It's like it's an invitation to community, and we can do this. We've actually seen it work. But what does it mean to get engaged? Actually, I was thinking about this when I was writing this. You know, I thought about when I got engaged to my wife, you know, and she was silly enough to actually say yes and to marry me, and we celebrated 30 years last October. So it was, you know, so far so well. 22 of the best years of her life, okay? You know what I mean? So why is that funny? You think I'm being generous? Probably am, okay? Maybe 18 good years for her. My best 30, for the record, okay? Because I know this is being recorded. For the record, my best 30, okay? Suze, you know what I mean, okay? But the reality is when we got engaged, and those of you who have been engaged who are, you know, or with somebody, don't you just love it? All right? It's a time of like joyful expectation, right? A time of joyful anticipation of being able to walk together hand in hand through life. You know, it just, I loved it. We literally envisioned getting old together. Now we're there and we hate it. All right. But we did. We were young and naive and stupid and broke, and it was so fun, you know? We didn't envision cancer. We didn't envision heart attacks. We didn't envision children who have minds of their own, who want to do things. You all know what I mean. I see some of you nodding, okay? We didn't envision the setbacks and the daily grind that it takes to actually get to the happily ever after. We weren't thinking about that. We were thinking about how much we were in love. But the reality is, I want the happily ever after in my marriage. And that means I have to commit to the drudgery and the really hard work that goes along with actually getting us there, right? We can't be naive enough to think, yeah, those good things should happen, and then expect them to happen without us having to do it, right? And it's the same thing. If we want that to work for relationships to thrive, it's the same thing with God's call for us on injustice. It doesn't happen because we look at it and we're sad. It doesn't happen because we look at it and get afraid and turn away. It happens when we will engage it, all right? Faith is not merely good intention belief. Isn't sometimes the hardest journey, the longest journey you'll ever take, is the 12 inches from the head to the heart? Sometimes that's the longest journey you'll ever make in your life. And the reality is, we have to let our minds be so filled with God's call on our lives for His justice. Not our justice, His justice. It's when we do that, then we're going to be so full that we can't help but act. And that's when it becomes part of who we are, not part of something we know about. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm making any sense. So we have to be doers, but not simply just acting, as I've said before. We have to be so full that we are fully engaged in the process. Faith is a verb. Faith isn't an idea. It's not a noun. It's a verb. Remember what James said, the brother of Jesus. Do not merely listen to the words and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Simple lessons for us that we need to be reminded. I'm not telling anything new to any of you. Listen, I need these lessons just like everybody else on this planet needs these lessons. That's why we need to continually engage in Scripture. We need to continue to reinvest ourselves in God's Word and His hope for our lives. But if we're going to do this, we have to actually do it. I'm going to give you a warning, though, okay? And I'm coming towards the end. The type of work that I'm asking you to do, it can really be messy. It smells bad, literally. It literally smells bad, and it's dirty, and it's filthy, and frankly, sometimes it's gross. And we have to engage in it, you know? And it's gonna take us so far beyond our areas of comfort. Anybody think that's awesome, I can't wait to go do that? I know a couple of people who are like that, are like, bring it, all right? You got some kind of challenge? Done, challenge accepted, I'm ready to rock. Most people, though, are like, yeah, what's it going to cost me? And I don't mean dollars, okay? You know what I mean? I'm kind of worried about, you know, what is the cost of engagement to my family? What's the cost of engagement to me physically, to my own personal desires, okay? What gifts and skills do I have that I can actually engage with this? That's what I think we hear the most, and I think that's where the majority of people are. And I got to be honest with you, I found myself in that latter category. I was excited to engage it, but I also was racked with insecurities about what do I have, what can I do? And by the way, this is when I was former military, I was law enforcement, loved laying hands on people in a way that wasn't trying to heal them of anything, if you know what I mean, okay? All right, so, you know, I still was racked with the insecurities about what do I have to offer, Lord? What can I do, all right? And He's like, I've got this. Don't worry about it. It's not about you. When I first found out about human trafficking, I said it was really late in my career. I actually did a career replay and went, oh my gosh, I've arrested trafficking victims. I know it. I was so shocked and appalled. But you know what I loved about it too? I was close to starting to think about retirement. I'm like, what transferable skills do I have as an FBI agent to a life outside of the government? I don't really know. God gifted me with an understanding of this. I actually posted on social media that day. I know what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I'm going to engage in this process, and it's a way that I can actually do it. And I told them, I got really excited about it. And my brother's wife, her name's Kathy, and I love her. She's amazing. Okay, and I told her about human trafficking, and she was freaking out. And I was, you know, right? Okay. And I said, I can't wait. I'm so anxious to go do this. I had been teaching at the academy. Life was comfortable. There's no training emergencies. Okay. It was so good. I had such an easy coast life. Okay. Teaching at the FBI academy. I even had a full size locker in the gym, not one of those weenie half size. Okay. Cause I'd been in for the whole time, you know? And it was like, God was all of a sudden saying, dude, time to get uncomfortable. And so I was really excited and talking to Kathy about this. And I was like, I can't wait to deploy overseas and to really go do this. And she said, is it going to be dangerous? She was really concerned for me. She loves me. And first words out of my mouth were, I hope so. And I'm like, huh. And I remember actually saying that and then go, why did I just say that? All right. Because not some cocky, you know, like, I think I got this, you know, Jack Ryan kind of thing, okay? That's not what I meant. I think what I meant was I wanted the work that I was doing to have a real impact, right? I mean, it's been my belief that if we're truly going to act out our faith, if we're going to act out our faith, it should be dangerous to those who want to oppose God and his justice for the world and those who want to harm others. We should be dangerous. We shouldn't be soft. We shouldn't be passive. We should be dangerous people to the world that's trying to oppress other human beings. I've always wanted my faith and my work and, frankly, my life to not be tepid and lukewarm like Jesus talks about in Revelation, right? You know, that's what I want it to actually matter. In fact, for years, I've had this quote by Teddy Roosevelt on my wall in my office. And I'm cheap, okay? All right, so I just printed it out on a piece of paper and, like, stuck it to my pod wall, okay? And then when I moved into an actual office, I just taped it on the wall. And so one of my colleagues who loves me and wants better for me got me a piece of art that actually has this on the wall, and this is the quote, and I love this, and I periodically still read this so I can remember what I'm about. And this is from Teddy Roosevelt speaking, I think, in 1910 in Paris. It is not the critic who counts. Not the man or woman, by the way, who points out how the strong man or woman stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, and at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. You can't tell? I'm still getting goosebumps when I read that. I'm like, dude, I so want that for my life, man. I just love that quote. I want to dare greatly. I want to get dusty and sweaty and bloody in the arena. I just do. Like, I saw there's a one-man show on the Apostle John that was done, and there's a line in there that says, you know, when I smell battle smoke, I want to fight. And I'm like, oh, or something like that, and I'm totally screwing up the quote, but, you know, that's how I feel. And yet I got to be honest, at the same time, when I had my conversation with Kathy, I was also racked with insecurities and challenges. As I said, what skills that I possessed, but I also had a wife and kids. What happens to them if I die? Very real things, okay? And so luckily, though, I was wise enough and I was surrounded by people of God who were wise enough to help me understand that my passion and my vigor without wisdom and expertise is in fact dangerous and not to the perpetrators of injustice. Right? There is no excuse for us to be passionate and ignorant, right? Ignorance, in fact, combined with passion, can really harm and screw up efforts of people who actually have wisdom. I was hiring for a job for an investigator, all right? And this is not to shame anyone, okay? But I'm going to tell you a story, all right? And I was hiring for an investigator, and this dude called me up. And I think in church, he heard about traffic, and he was like, oh, I so want to work for you as an investigator. I'm like, awesome. So glad. I'm looking for people who know what they're doing. What's your background? He goes, oh, man, I do heating and air conditioning work. And I'm like, brother, you cannot work for me. And he was like, he got offended. And I'm like, listen, your passion, it's okay. All right, I love that your passion. And he said, well, what can I do? And I said, are you willing to accept an honest answer? I've learned over the years that I had to actually ask that question instead of just assuming they wanted the honest answer, right? So, and he said, yes. I said, be willing to become an apprentice. If you want, and I know where you live, there are a couple of really good anti-trafficking organizations in that area. Go volunteer with them. Actually learn this issue. Become a humble learner, right? Do all of that. And then, meanwhile, quit your job, join the police force, become a detective. And once you become a detective, then in 10 years, come back and apply and say, hey, how can I investigate with you guys? And he hated that. And I said, or just spitballing here, okay? There are a ton of organizations who could really use some free HVAC work, who are skimping by on like really, really small budgets, and they can't afford a new AC unit, or they can't afford to get their heating fixed, all right? Maybe the gifts that you have actually can be applied. Does that make sense? There's no glamour jobs in this. There are none. We all need to envelop ourselves together. We need investigators. We need attorneys. We need social workers. We also need entrepreneurs. We need engineers who know how to dig wells, okay? We need dudes who know how to do HVAC work, all right? All of us need to be able to combine our skills and get over the fact that we want to be the ones that some kind of glory. That's really kind of scary to me, okay? The reality is, if we want to actually engage with this process, we need to be willing to take on the skills that we have been given by God. It's a gift. Listen, there are some people who will never, ever work with victims or survivors, and frankly shouldn't. But maybe they have the gift to organize volunteers who can actually work with those, right? They have this organizational capacity that they can. And yet too often we want to be the ones that get to go in and actually work with survivors. And why? I don't understand that at all. And yet if they would just humble themselves and be humble learners. And I have to be honest, for me, when I was very concerned and scared and I talked about it was, you know, time to get uncomfortable, God was really telling me get uncomfortable, that's what I needed to do. I didn't need to learn how to be an investigator. I already did that. In fact, I was teaching people how to do that. All right. I didn't need to learn how to teach. I didn't need to learn how to lay hands on people. I knew how to do that. You know what I needed to do? I needed to learn the issue. I needed to learn that statute. I needed to learn the complexities within the anti-trafficking community. And so what I did, I became an apprentice. I became an apprentice, and I actually got to surround myself with experts and learn from them. None of us are too old to learn. You know, or we shouldn't be, you know, humble learning. I love that both of you talked about humility, right? You know, that we have to be able to be willing to be humble learners and to be able to go, I don't have this. I don't get this, you know? And the reality is we don't have the strength on ourselves to be able to do it all. We don't have the wisdom. We don't have the intelligence. I certainly don't have the strength or the stamina to do that. And I have to be honest, the numbers are unrelenting on trafficking. The numbers on injustice issues are unrelenting, and it's scary. It's scary to me, and sometimes it's so unrelenting that it causes immobility. And when that happens, then faith becomes more than a verb. Faith becomes the only true source of comfort, right? Surround yourself with godly men and women. Surround yourself with the Word of God, and then you can let God be the one ultimately responsible for His justice. And I know that I found that that's the only time of comfort that I can have when I do get overwhelmed. And I often resist doing that. But when I do engage with God through worship, through study of His Word, through actually understanding Him, I always come out refreshed. To me, it's one of the greatest gifts of the church. And sometimes just taking a simple step, it's all that's needed. What can you do? All right? Not this massive step, okay? Not a New Year's resolution level step, okay? All right? Don't try to combat all of injustice or all of human trafficking. I love that my organization is intentionally not holistic. We know what we're good at, and we're going to stay there. And we're going to try to resolve the anti-trafficking efforts of governments. We're not going to try to improve the entire law enforcement efforts. If you will take small steps where you're gifted, you can actually start really having and truly having an impact. Take small steps. God's with us. So let's take some steps and risk getting dusty and sweaty and bloody. And you don't have to have it all figured out. Just be willing to be an apprentice and to learn humbly. Your weakness, as Paul reminds us, our weakness in his grace will be made perfect in Christ for his glory. He is longing for us to intervene. So many people need our help. Just let's go get engaged. Amen.
We all know Harmony Dust Grillo, and I am so honored and humbled to be the one asked to introduce her today. As a victim herself of exploitation turned UCLA honors student, as an educator, I love that. It tells me that there is a place for education in the journey to restoration. Harmony is here to help women and girls entrenched in sexual exploitation find freedom. She is passionate about assisting women, but she's passionate and educated in the process and their journeys of healing and transformation. She founded Treasures in 2003, faith-based outreach and support group to women in the sex industry and victims of sex trafficking. Armed with her personal experience, a master's degree in social work, evidence-based theories, she sheds light on the impact of a pornified culture and the lives of women trapped within it. She's received congressional recognition. She's trained LA Police Department, Las Vegas Police Department, Department of Justice, and Dave, even the FBI, in best practices for working with victims of sexual exploitation and trafficking. Her memoir, the second edition, Scars and Stilettos, is out here today. Buy it. Oh, that wasn't in the bio, but yes. Harmony is a voice for the voiceless, and she is here to ensure justice for those being crushed.
All righty. Good morning. I want to start by honoring and thanking Brian and Kelly for all of your years of dedication to the issue of trafficking. And I love this model. I love what's being done here. I have the opportunity to train all over the world, and I tell people about what you're doing here in this place because I believe in it, and I think it's so awesome, and I'm so grateful. Right now, there is a growing movement to fully decriminalize prostitution in the United States. More and more states are adding it to their legislative agenda, and it's very likely coming up in the state of California as well in the near future. And so I'm really thankful that Brian and Kelly have invited me today to speak about that so we can understand what the implications are and so that we can all be educated and empowered to have intelligent conversations around this issue and to make good choices when it comes to it. So, with our voting power. So, this issue is very personal to me because I am the daughter of a victim of trafficking. I myself am a survivor of exploitation, overcomer, and I have spent 20 years working with victims of exploitation and trafficking. The first 3 years I worked with social service agencies, and then 17 years ago I founded Treasures. And our goal is to help women live healthy and flourishing lives and help them to find permanent pathways to freedom from the commercial sex industry and from exploitation and trafficking. And I'm so thankful for that work that I get to do. Because I really want to get to the meat of this discussion, and some of you have already even heard my story, I'm not going to have a lot of time to go into that at all today. If you are interested, Sandy mentioned my book, Scars and Stilettos, for National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. We want to make this really affordable for everyone, so it's on sale today for $10. So you can go grab a copy of that if you're interested in learning more about my story. So the big question is, should prostitution be fully decriminalized? And support for this is being fueled by sex workers' rights groups, who quite frankly are incredibly, the movement to decriminalize prostitution is incredibly well-funded and well-planned. They are way ahead of the curve, and we have a lot of catching up to do when it comes to this. And sex workers' rights groups who are saying, hey, we want this, full decrim is what we want, they don't represent the majority of those in prostitution. Their voices tend to be loud. However, when it comes to the oppressed, the marginalized, the vulnerable, the exploited, the trafficked, they're not speaking up as often or as loudly, and their voices are not being heard, and they need to be. Sex workers' rights groups in favor of decriminalization do not represent the 89% of women in prostitution who want to escape but don't see any other survival. And, you know, I do also want to acknowledge that I recognize that many people have ended up in prostitution just out of a desperate need for survival. And so I'm not here at all to judge that. And I know, I have personally known women who began working in prostitution to pay for chemotherapy or to buy much needed medication for their children. But my dream and my desire is to see systemic change to the point where that's not a person's only viable option for survival. So one of the things that comes up in this debate is the idea that prostitution is just a job and therefore should be decriminalized because it's just a job like any other. Who are we to say that consenting adults can't sell their bodies? That is, you know, kind of part of this paradigm. But mortality rates alone dispel the myth that prostitution is just a job, because the death rate of women in prostitution is 240 times any other profession. That's not just a job. In addition, violence in prostitution is the absolute norm. Are my slides happening here? Okay. violence is the norm. 83% of women in prostitution report having been threatened with a weapon, and 82% report having been physically assaulted. 80% report being raped. In fact, women in prostitution are considered the most raped class of women in the history of our planet, with 80% having been raped at least once, and 73% being raped at least 5 times. In any other job, this level of sexual harassment would be subject to legal action. In prostitution, it's a job requirement. Right? I remember part of my history is working in the commercial sex industry and strip clubs under the control of a pimp. And strip clubs are obviously a legal form of the commercial sex industry. And I was sexually assaulted on many occasions in the club. And I actually began to fight back. I would take off my stiletto, and I would beat the men over the head who had assaulted me. And on a number of occasions, the police were called. And when I told the police that I did what I did because I was defending myself, because I had just been assaulted, they looked at me like I was crazy. Because how could I be standing half naked in the middle of a strip club saying that I was sexually assaulted? It's my job to get sexually assaulted, was the way they were looking at me. In fact, they told me that if I did not apologize to the person who had assaulted me, then I was facing mutual battery charges, right? So that's in a legal area of the commercial sex industry. Prostitution is not just a job. Other evidence for this is in the fact that we see rates of post-traumatic stress disorder in women in the sex industry that are equivalent to combat war veterans. Equivalent to combat war veterans. Huge rates of PTSD. If it were just a job, we wouldn't see those levels of PTSD. One study actually found that 71% of the participants showed clinically significant signs of dissociation, which is a psychological defense against trauma where we begin to detach and kind of split from ourselves. I have a lot of sexual abuse and rape in my history, and so I know firsthand what that's like. Here's how one survivor explained it. There are thousands of books and classes that provide women with information on self-defense and rape avoidance strategies. Some of the basic lessons they teach us are not to walk alone at night on dark, deserted streets, not to get into cars with strange men, not to pick up guys in a bar, and not even to let a delivery man into your home when you're by yourself. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm like, when I answer the door, I'm like, yes. Yet this is what the job of prostitution requires, that women put themselves in jeopardy every time they turn a trick. And then we ask, how do you prevent it from leading to danger? The answer is, you can't. Count the bodies. Prostitution is not just a job like any other. It is an incredibly profitable system of violence that exploits the most vulnerable. The other thing is, are you guys good? This is a lot to take in on a Sunday morning. It's a lot to talk about for me at this hour. I do my best sleeping at this hour on a Sunday morning. Yeah, so the other thing is prostitution and trafficking are inextricably connected. It's estimated that 70% of female trafficking victims are trafficked into the commercial sex industry, including prostitution and legal forms of it. And this is, for me, one of the most striking pieces of data that we have that's based on a review of 18 different sources, a number of research articles, government data, and it's estimated that 84% of women in prostitution are under third-party control or being pimped or trafficked, right? 84% are under third-party control. So this is not a situation of consenting adults who just having a plethora of employment opportunities available decide that selling their bodies for sex is their career of choice. 84% are under third-party control. And the most vulnerable in our society are the most susceptible. When you look at the backgrounds and the histories of women who find themselves in prostitution, you find very high rates of physical violence in childhood, physical abuse. You find extraordinarily high rates of childhood sexual abuse. The numbers on this vary anywhere from 60 to 95%, and this really has a lot to do with disclosure rates. How many of you guys know a lot of people who have childhood sexual abuse in their histories don't always disclose that, right? And for some of us, it takes a long time for us to even kind of like acknowledge and face that that's a part of our story, right? So up to 95% have a history of childhood sexual abuse. And I can tell you for myself, with this being in my history, the first time I walked into a strip club, I had never been in that environment before. However, it was very familiar to me because my history of sexual abuse and rape taught me to be comfortable with being sexualized and objectified, right? It made that environment comfortable and familiar to me because my whole history had, in a sense, groomed me for the commercial sex industry because that's the job. And when you look at the entire body of research when it comes to women in prostitution, it is overwhelmingly showed that women in prostitution are disproportionately impoverished, undereducated, ethnic minorities, and those with few marketable job skills. It is because of this that it has often been called the choice made by those who have no choice. Because what is choice without options? Ultimately, it's not a system of empowerment. It's not a job just like any other, but it's a system that exploits the most vulnerable in our society. The final thing, and this is very important when we're talking about full decriminalization of prostitution, is that it does not decrease trafficking. And that's a big one, right? Because I've even heard it being pitched as a way to protect trafficking victims. But what we know in studies that have been done across 150 countries looking at the issue of trafficking, it's been found that in general, on average, any place where prostitution is legal or decriminalized, it leads to greater inflows of human trafficking. Why? Because we know that anytime prostitution is legalized, people who wouldn't normally buy sex begin to buy sex. The demand explodes, and the demand does exactly what it promises. It demands supply. By any means necessary, it demands supply. And this is where pimps and traffickers come in. They meet that demand by trafficking, exploiting women by any means necessary, by kidnapping, drugging, rape, torture, beatings, manipulation, coercion, right? Trickery. Any means necessary to meet the demand. It does not lead to a decrease in trafficking. It leads to an increase in trafficking. I want to quickly go over the four models that we use to address prostitution so that you can be informed about the difference between each model. You've heard me use the term decriminalization. You've heard me use the term legalization. So what are each of the models? The first model is criminalization. That's what we currently have. Buying sex, selling sex, pimping, pandering, brothel keeping, everything related to prostitution is considered currently criminal, right? One of the challenges that we're seeing with this model today is that women are disproportionately the ones being arrested. By and large, like by a long shot. There's not a lot of data that I've seen on this, but I've heard numbers 89% of arrests are women, and the 90%, depending on the state you look at. Most of the people being arrested are the women, and we just said 84% are under third-party control. 84% are victims, right? And they're the ones getting arrested. And meanwhile, sex buyers and traffickers are not experiencing consequences. As you heard from Dave, you are more likely to get hit by lightning than to be arrested and prosecuted as a trafficker. That's crazy, right? And so if we continue with the criminalization model, and that is an option that we have, we need to do better at identifying victims of trafficking. We need to do better at bringing buyers and traffickers and pimps to justice. We need to do better at offering alternative sentencing so that women trapped in prostitution have pathways to freedom and ways to get out. And I just want to say, because I heard myself say women, I'm using female pronouns a lot in this conversation. One reason is I work with females. That's the audience that I serve. Another is the majority of those in prostitution are women. But I do want to acknowledge that, yes, men and boys and many in the LGBTQ community are also victims of trafficking and also involved in prostitution. So I just want to acknowledge that because I'm using the term women a lot. So criminalization is one model. Legalization is another model. This is what we see in places in Nevada where prostitution is legal and it's regulated. So when it's legal, that means it's regulated. We see this in the red light district in Amsterdam. The other interesting thing about this model is that the government is then profiting off of the exploitation of people when prostitution is legal. That doesn't feel good to me. That doesn't sit right with me. The other thing we know we talked about is that in places where prostitution is legal, it leads to an incredible increase in trafficking, right? Because the demand will be met by any means necessary. When you look at Nevada, Making prostitution in Nevada led to an incredible increase, a boom in the illegal sex trade there. In fact, they have the largest illegal sex trade in the nation adjusted for population, right? So that's legalization. Decriminalization would remove all criminal penalties regarding to prostitution. That means selling sex, buying sex, pimping, pandering would all be not at all criminal and not at all subject to arrest or any sort of penalties, which is why some people have called full decriminalization the pro-pimping law, because that means it would not be illegal to be a pimp. And if you are familiar with the anti-trafficking movement, you are probably well aware that pimping is a form of trafficking, because the tactics that pimps use to manipulate, recruit women and victims is force, fraud, and coercion, right? It's trafficking. And the thing with that is, well, trafficking would remain illegal, but in many cases, it's difficult to prove that someone is being trafficked because victims don't self-identify, and because of the psychological coercion and manipulation that goes on, many women who are being trafficked will go and protect and stand up for the very person that's trafficking them because they are so brainwashed. So decriminalization would be incredibly dangerous and would lead to horrible outcomes and would lead to an incredible increase in trafficking. The final model is known as the abolition model. You might have heard it referred to as the Nordic model. In this model, selling sex would be not criminal. That might be like, wait, what? Did you just say selling sex is not criminal? Yes, I did. In this model, it acknowledges that a person should not be criminalized for their own exploitation. Buying sex, pimping, pandering would all remain illegal, but selling sex would not be criminalized because it would acknowledge that a person should not be criminalized for their own exploitation. This is essentially what we're beginning to do when it comes to minors. How many of you know that until the very recent past, children were being arrested for prostitution? But we know that anytime a person under the age of 18 is engaged in a commercial sex act, by federal definition, it's trafficking, right? There's no such thing as a child prostitute. We're finally starting to catch up. The law is finally starting to catch up. In many states across the nation, including California, a child can no longer be arrested for prostitution because we have a victim-centered approach and understanding that that child should not be criminalized for their own exploitation. The abolition model would essentially extend that to adult populations, understanding the vulnerability, understanding the exploitation that is inherent to prostitution. And in this model, it's also important to include support for programs and services that provide victims avenues to alternative ways of surviving so that they don't have to sell their bodies for sex, right? Even the people that have said to me, Harmony, I work in prostitution by choice, right? There are people who say that. I don't have a pimp. I'm a free agent. I'm here by choice. But I'll tell you what, if I could make a living doing anything else, I would, right? What is choice without options? So the abolition model would address that in that way. The good news is there is hope. There is hope because God loves justice. I am standing here today because God loves justice, because God is a redeemer. God is a healer. God restores. I'm standing here today because a 22-year-old college student reached out to me. She wasn't an expert in exploitation. She didn't have a degree. She wasn't a therapist. She wasn't a social worker. She didn't run a nonprofit. 22-year-old college student reached out to me, saw the image of God in me, treated me with respect, loved me unconditionally, and showed me that there was a different way, a different life that I could have. And I want to encourage you that You can, using who you are, what's in you, your strengths, your abilities, who you are, you can do that for someone else. You can make an impact in the lives of other people. You can make an impact in the issue of trafficking. I love the example that Dave used about the person with the HVAC expertise. Maybe you're not going to be a federal investigator, but can you support nonprofits by providing HVAC repair, right? Like, use what's in your hand. A couple of really quick things as I wrap up. I know that in a very short time, I have hit you with a lot of information. It's very important to me that you leave here today equipped to have some basic conversations around this, especially as this issue comes up in the state of California. So we have created a postcard that has an overview of the talk that I've just done, along with some key facts on decriminalization. So we have that available at the Treasurer's booth. We would love to get that into your hands so that you can take it home, go over it, be equipped. Also, the PowerPoint that I've used today is available to you if you would like it. All you have to do, sign up for the Treasurer's newsletter at our table. We'll send that to you because I want to equip you. I really want to equip you. Number two, choose an organization to partner with using your time, talent, or treasure. Doesn't have to be Treasurer's. If it is, thank you. But there are so many great organizations out there. Find one that resonates with you, that feels like a fit for you, and support them. I mean, in any way you can, time, talent, and treasure. Pick a book or a blog and learn more. There, again, doesn't have to be Scars and Stilettos. Please read Scars and Stilettos. But there, I'm sure, are plenty of books out there that would be helpful in educating you. You can't afford a book? Go to the Treasurer's website, iamatreasurer.com. We have a blog that can help educate you. In fact, there is a blog on the Treasurer's website called Should Prostitution Be Legal? If you're interested in the actual, the list of works cited for all the data that I've talked about today, that's all in the blog. So I reference the research that each stat came from, so you can go check that out. And finally, use your voice. Use your voice. Use your influence. Have conversations. Use your voting power because you really can make a difference. Thank you so much for having me.
Love ending all of that because it's thick, but ending that all and on the hope piece. So beautiful. Hey, our workshops, you have those little flyers, and so room 131, 32, and 33 are upstairs on my right, your left, and the Agape Mercy Room is my left, your right, and so that's where they're at. Our workshops will start right at 9:30 when second service starts. If you'd like to, again, just look through the five workshops and pick one of those. I'm going to dismiss you now. Thank you so much for just in learning. We'll see what God's going to do with each of us. Thank you.